Our first lesson this morning from God's holy word comes from Psalm 97. The Lord is King. Let the earth rejoice. Let the many coastlands be glad. Clouds and thick darkness are all around him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Fire goes before him and consumes his adversaries on every side. His lightnings light up the world. The earth sees and trembles. The mountains melt like wax before the Lord of all the earth. The heavens proclaim his righteousness, and all the peoples behold his glory. All worshippers of images are put to shame. Those who make their boast in worthless idols. All gods bow down before him. Zion hears and is glad, and the towns of Judah rejoice because of your judgments, O God. For you, O Lord, are most high over all the earth. You are exalted far above all gods. The Lord loves those who hate evil. He guards the lives of his faithful. He rescues them from the hand of the wicked. Light dawns for the righteous and joy for the upright in heart. Rejoice in the Lord, O you righteous, and give thanks to his holy name.
From the Gospel of John, Jesus at prayer says to God the Father, I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I have made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them and I in them. The word of the Lord. If you have ever been praying aloud at some occasion with urgent fervor, perhaps at the bedside of someone ill or at some public gathering, and you have found yourself going on and on and on, not knowing where to stop and circling back with a lot of dear lords, then you have been in good company. Our scripture reading is Jesus' own prayer in the presence of his disciples, and he loops around and uses the same words over and over, you and me and you, we and them, they and us. And the astonishing thing is that Jesus is praying for us. I mean, way back then, he is praying for us, for the future of the church universal, for those of us who would come to believe in him from the word passed along by those earliest disciples. Since the Middle Ages, this whole 17th chapter of John has been called Jesus' High Priestly Prayer. It falls naturally into three parts. Jesus prays for himself as he faces his own future death and resurrection, that he may be obedient to the glory of God. Then he prays for those dear friends sitting there, listening to this prayer the first time it was uttered, his disciples, who will be left in the world after his resurrection and his ascension into heaven. He prays that they may fulfill their mission of representing Christ to the world. Finally, in the last part of the prayer that we have just heard, he prays for us, literally saying, I ask not only on behalf of these disciples, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word. And just what is it that he wants for us? He prays for unity. For oneness. It is an audacious, astonishing, holy desire that Jesus offers up to God the Father. He prays that God's children will be united and enjoy a oneness as Jesus the Son and God the Father are distinct persons and yet one Lord, one God. It's hard to imagine, is it not? Jesus prays that those of us who believe in him will be related to one another as Jesus himself is related to God the Father. Here again, our own prayer life might have some traction with this prayer of Jesus, for if you've ever wondered how God hears and actually responds to your prayers, surely Jesus must be thinking about now, dear God, over 2,000 years ago, I prayed for unity and oneness, but just look at the hostility and divisiveness among your children now. It's about time you got back to me with some answer. As another preacher commented about the difficulty in believing this text, we will all be one as Jesus and the Father are one. We aliens and strangers brought near and made members of the same household. The concept is not all that difficult, but the applications seem all but impossible as one eye-rolling confirmand once said to me after recounting the horror of the week's news, if there is a God, surely he's not doing a very good job. All this oneness sounds like mom and apple pie, unicorns and rainbows with pots of gold at the end, but let's face it, we don't see much of it actually happening. Whew, that is a pretty honest reaction to this prayer of Jesus, especially in this era of disunity and discord. Published 8 years ago now, Bill Bishop's The Big Sort, Why a Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart, still sits on my bookshelf as a reminder and a pretty good analysis of how our country is breaking apart into like-minded, homogeneous communities. Bill Bishop says that over the last 3 decades, Americans have been sorting ourselves into communities that have become increasingly homogeneous by the neighborhoods we choose to live in, the television stations we tune into, and even the places of worship that reflect particular values. And that's where the rubber meets the road for me when I think about Jesus' prayer for unity, because I think the church does not necessarily need to be one of those places where everyone is sorted into like-minded community. We in the church are called to model a different kind of oneness than what we typically associate with unity. The unity for which Jesus prays is not about agreeing with one another or even getting along all of the time. As a matter of fact, we Presbyterians affirm that God alone is Lord of the conscience, meaning that we are supposed to have differing God-given points of view, and therefore we come to decisions best by sharing our different perspectives and then together discerning the mind of Christ. I think that is what Jesus is praying for, the affirmation of difference, as God the Father is different from God the Son. And yet they share a profound unity of love, of concern for the world, of love for the human family and for one another. This prayer of Jesus that all will be one actually resonates with the early history of the observance of Mother's Day. While Anna Jarvis of West Virginia and later of Philadelphia is credited with the institution of Mother's Day, historians trace its roots to Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day Proclamation of 1872. Sometimes these origins have gotten lost in the sentimentality of family love, but Mother's Day began as an appeal for peace among the human family, following the American Civil War and the Franco-Prussian War. Written in 1872, Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day Proclamation declared, "In this day of progress, in this century of light, the ambition of rulers has been allowed to barter the dear interest of domestic life for the bloody exchanges of the battlefield. Women need no longer be made a party to proceedings which fill the world with grief and horror. Arise then, Christian women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of water or of tears. Say firmly, our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of one country, will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure others." Just as this Mother's Day proclamation looked toward the future with hope for peace, that a new day would dawn for the sons of mothers, so Jesus' prayer looks toward the future with hope that the followers who would come long after Jesus' earliest disciples will share in a profound fellowship, that despite our differences, we would enjoy a unity that points to the grand scheme of God's love and concern for the world, so that by our witness, the world might come to know God, to believe in God, and to be shaped by God's love in Jesus Christ. It may seem like an impossible dream, but Jesus also interjects in his prayer a petition that he will be around to help us. After asking God to bless us with unity and oneness, Jesus adds to his prayer, "Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world." Jesus knows that we cannot achieve this kind of holy unity and oneness apart from the presence of God with us. That's what glory means, the full, weighty presence of God with us, among us, for us, the presence of God in the person of Jesus Christ empowers us to a greater unity in and for the world. No one human interaction can fully capture this kind of unity for which Jesus prays, but every once in a while, you can catch a glimpse of it. Last Sunday afternoon, I came across a little human interest story that seemed to me a demonstration of Jesus' hopes for the unity of the human family. Perhaps some of you saw it. It took place in a courthouse in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Joe Cerna served 3 tours in Afghanistan. The Green Beret survived both an IED and a suicide bomber and was awarded 2 Purple Hearts. Retired Army Sergeant First Class Cerna also came home with a serious case of post-traumatic stress disorder. He was arrested for drunk driving, and part of his probation was that he was not allowed to drink. So when he lied about a urine test, the judge felt he had no choice. "I gave Joe a night in jail because he had to be held accountable," said Judge Lou Oliveira. It was just one night. But as he entered the cell, Joe Cerna said that he knew it would be one of the longest nights of his life. His anxiety intensified, and a flashback began to take him back to a terrifying moment in Afghanistan. He had been in a truck with 3 other soldiers following a creek when the road gave way. The truck went into the creek and began filling with water. Trapped and unable to move, Joe felt the water rise past his legs, then his waist and neck, until it finally stopped at his chin. He was the only one pulled from that truck alive, and it left him with a terrible fear of small, cramped places. Judge Oliveira knew Joe's history and his fears, but he felt he had to spend a night in jail for violating his parole. But, he decided, he didn't need to spend that night alone. So a few minutes after Joe Cerna was locked up, Judge Oliveira himself entered Joe's cell and joined him for the entire night. They ate meatloaf, and they talked about their families. Joe said, "And the walls of that small, claustrophobic prison cell began to expand. And then the walls didn't exist anymore. He brought me back to North Carolina from being in a truck in Afghanistan." The walls came down. Friends, Jesus is God, so close to us that the walls may come down. Jesus prays for us. Jesus prays for the world. Jesus prays that we might be united, joined as one in love for each other as a witness to God's love for the world. We are not called to this witness, to this work alone. We are given the good company of fellow believers with whom, despite all kinds of differences and distinctions, we are united as one under one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of us all. And Jesus prays that his glory might be with us, so that this unity and oneness is not an impossible dream, but a present reality by the presence of Christ himself. We can choose to live into it, loving one another for the sake of all mothers and all fathers and all the children of the world. The world for whom Jesus prays. Amen.